All right, we're recording. This is July 23rd, 1999. We're in the home of Olga Gallegos, who is the member of the Board of Trustees of the Houston Independent School District and chair of that board. Is that correct?
No, I was chair last year.
Oh, last year. Okay.
This year, I am assistant secretary.
Well, why don't we start there? How did you get to be chair of the board and even member of the board?
Well, I have been there for a while, and before then I did not feel like I wanted to take on that responsibility, and so I decided to take it last year, and I had the votes, so I was elected president of HISD board for 1998.
Mm-hmm. And now you're assistant secretary or secretary?
Yes. Yes, I was assistant secretary, and actually I was almost appointed there by the president because nobody else wanted to take it, I guess.
What were some of the powers or duties as chair of the board?
Well, as chair of the board, I was, I had to go to several functions with different organizations and to present views, some of the views at our school district, HISD, and also I had to go to the different areas of the school district and the different communities, you know, to speak before the parents. And in some instances, I had to go before the teachers, administrators, you know, when they have their services. And that way, we let them know that A lot of teachers out there knew that there was a board, but they don't always meet the board or the president. And so this is what I did, you know. And of course, I worked closely with the superintendent before board meetings, when we had a policy, you know, that we wanted to implement in the district, you know, and this is actually what the board does, you know, they make policy, and the superintendent is the one that implements it. And I went, you know, I went over that with him, but after I got the views from all the board members, of course, you know, all the board members meet to discuss this, you know, before we can take it to the superintendent. The superintendent will take it and work with his top administrators, and then he'll come back and present it to the board so that we can vote on it.
But what was your greatest accomplishment and greatest disappointment?
The greatest accomplishment in 1998, gosh, I cannot remember.
Okay.
But the Houston School District has had a lot of firsts, you know. Well, I know what the greatest accomplishment was the bond election. $697 million bond election. How could I forget that? So I believe that. And you know, we had already had a bond election a few years before that had failed. And so this is the greatest thing that happened.
And your biggest disappointment?
The biggest disappointment, gosh, I can't think of the biggest disappointment.
How do you, you said you got to be chair because you had the votes. How do you go about getting votes for any particular issue or policy or position?
For the position of chair of president, I contacted some of the board members, okay? Well, actually, I contacted them both. There was one that she felt that she wanted to be president, okay? But when I felt that I had enough votes, I says, I'm going to go for it, you know? And that was it. You know, there's always somebody that wants a chance at it too, you know.
How many whites, how many blacks, how many browns are on the school
board? We have three Anglos, three blacks, and three Hispanics.
Wow. You just lost a big vote yesterday. I read in the paper this morning.
That's right.
That 5-2.
Mm-hmm.
That's only seven, though. What happened to the other two votes? The absent?
No, it was 6-2.
Ah.
There was one board member that would have voted with us. That would have been our third vote. And she was not there. She had an emergency in the family.
And this was, of course, the bilingual program. Would you explain what you have in place now and what this policy mm-hmm. is going to change so we can understand?
The program that we have in the district now is a working program. It is a good working bilingual program because it has been praised nationally, that we have a good bilingual program. The problem was, or that we had, I guess you heard about that alternative certification program that we had in the district in trying to recruit bilingual teachers, and that we had that problem about 5 years ago. Where supposedly they had their own recruiting there for the bilingual department, and they were getting teachers that were not certified, bilingual teachers that had false documents, you know, records, and they found this out because somebody went and checked, like in Mexico, in certain university degrees and all of that. So what they did, they dismantled that whole department, and the hiring was transferred to our Human Resources Department of the Houston School District. And actually, they have not done much recruiting for bilingual teachers. And even though there is a shortage of bilingual teachers all over the U.S., they were not doing the recruiting in HISD for bilingual teachers. So that's a problem that could have been remedied, you know, had they been out there actively recruiting. The program itself, that I understand, works. And gosh, Jose, I cannot understand why they wanted to change it, because the program right now is, you know, operates under federal guidelines, you know, and they get monies from the federal government, from the state, and they have those guidelines to go by. And there has been no violation, as far as I know, you know, in those guidelines.
What's the change? What are they going to do now?
Well, what the wording, and I will give you a copy of the policy, the wording in the new policy states that they want to transition the Spanish-speaking students into English as rapidly as possible. And the wording is in that document is very open to where some of the state officials, when they got a hold of the document, they they had it examined by the professionals in bilingual education, and I'm talking about the attorneys for MALDEF, Mexican American Legal Defense Fund, and by Peter Roos, who is an attorney out of San Francisco, that worked on trying to keep that Proposition 22.
Well, 187 and 205, or there's various numbers.
Well, I cannot remember what proposition in California that did away with the bilingual education.
Oh yeah, okay.
Okay.
225 or something like that.
Uh-huh, okay. And so they read the document and they said it was like a page written out of that proposition that was passed in California. So, and I just don't know what's going to happen next, Jose, because, you know, they say that they will abide by federal guidelines, by state guidelines, but I felt that there were other programs in the district that needed to be looked into, you know, not a bilingual program. You know.
Why didn't the black votes support you?
Well, they said that they had meetings in their communities and that their constituency felt like they wanted to go with the changes. Although there were some constituency there at one of the forums that we had, plus our board meeting yesterday, that claimed that that they live in those districts where these black board members, the districts that black board members represent, and they were never notified of.
And it doesn't affect blacks, I mean.
No, it doesn't affect blacks, but I feel like they should have, I really don't believe that the black community out there was aware, Jose, just like our community was not aware, okay? Because I have heard that it borders on civil rights violations, too. So,
how did Vasquez end up going and joining and being a sponsor of this?
Well,
Greg Vasquez? Is
that his name? Gabriel Vasquez. Gabriel. Uh-huh. What it was is Gabriel Vasquez is a new board member. In fact, he's the third one that came on board, because before him there was an Anglo representing that district. And when he came on board, that I understand he had just come into the Houston community in 1995. I didn't know that. All I knew was that he was a professor of communications at U of H. And he decided to run for the board, and he did have an opponent, but since the opponent was a parent in the HISD school district, I think they kind of talked her out of it so that he would come on. And so at the election time, there was no opposition at all. His name, this was the only name on the ballot for that district. So he came in, you know, just clear and free, you know. And he was not that active last year on the board. I think last year was his first year. Last year and year before. I think he's been there 2 years. He has a 4-year term. So this year, the new president appointed him, and Jeff Chadwick, who is Anglo and represents part of the West, central west side of the city, which is the River Oaks area, you know. And she appointed, she said she was going to appoint a bilingual committee, you know. And I had been hearing, you know, off and on, talks that the bilingual program needed to, you know, be looked into, but I had also heard that special ed program needed to be looked into. And, you know, and that is one program that really needs to be looked into. So they didn't bring it up last year. The persons that were real interested in redoing bilingual, the trustees, or rather the board members, they didn't bring it up last year. Maybe because I was on the board, I was president of the board, and maybe because this year in January the legislature was going to be in session. I don't know for what reason they didn't bring it up last year, but I could hear, you know, every once in a while, some of the Anglo board members making, you know, remarks that, you know, they needed to, you know, go in there and look into the bilingual program. So this year, when we had a new board president, right away she appointed that was one of the first committees she appointed was the bilingual committee, and named Jeff Chadwick and Gabriel Vasquez. I couldn't understand it because Gabriel Vasquez is not bilingual. But then again, well, usually when you have a committee like that, they work with that department. They would be working with the multilingual department, you know, to sort of go through what is there already and what they want to, you know, redo. And and the president and Jeff Chadwick said they started working on it right away in January, you know, when the president appointed the committee. They started working on this policy right away in January. But in one interview in Channel 8, Gabriel Vasquez says that the reason he couldn't bring it out to the community was because they just started in March, you know, to work on it, and they just wanted to get it to the board, you know, so that the board would vote on it. And me and the other Hispanic board member did not see this document till 1 week before the June 18th board meeting, where it was going to bring, you know, be brought to a vote. And already this other Hispanic board member and I were scheduled to go to a conference that was an Aleo conference, and they knew because they in board services, that's the board that manages you know, the board member's office, you know. They knew that we were going to be out of town. Gabriel knew we were going to be out of town because he was also invited to this conference. You know, he attended it last year when they had it here in Houston, so he was invited. But no, they were going to bring it up while we were out of town, you know. And the elected officials, state officials, got involved, where they were scheduled to vote on it on the first reading in June, and we had just heard about it the week before. This Hispanic board member and I had heard about it the week before, and I did not go to that meeting to meet with Gabriel, because I had another commitment, but the other board member, Hispanic board member, brought me back the information. And she said, and Gabriel says that they're not going to vote on it next week. They are only going to have the first reading. So I read the document, and I could see that it was very open, you know. And again, it says that about doing the transition as rapidly as possible. And so we left. We went to Philadelphia, and the state officials took over. Well, oh, and I know what this other Hispanic board member, Gabriel, had told her. We're not going to vote on it. It's going to be first reading. On Friday, before we left, we got the agenda, because we get our board agendas on the Friday previous to the board meeting. And so I was reading that item, and at the bottom it read, to be approved on first reading. And so I called my colleague, the one that had met with Gabriel Vasquez, and I told her, I said, have you seen the agenda? And she says, no, I haven't. I says, well, you know, they're going to vote on that item next Thursday. And so, but she said, no, they can't. Gabriel said they wouldn't, you know. So she wrote a memo to Gabriel. Le puso, ¿qué pasó aquí? You know. You know, and she sent him a copy of the way the item read. It was going to go on the board table on Thursday. And, well, I do not know how he responded, but she left the following Monday, the same week of the board meeting. The board meeting was going to be held on Thursday. And I called the board president on Monday. I wasn't leaving till Wednesday, so I called the board president on Monday, and I told her, would she, you know, pull it out till we get back. And and she called me back on Tuesday, and she said, oh no, she says, what we're going to do on Thursday, we're just going to present it as a report. We're not going to vote on it. I says, but the agenda reads otherwise. And she said, well, that was a mistake that they made. That's what the president told me, but they were not going to pull it out.
Who's the president right now?
Lori Bricker. Okay. Lori Bricker.
Bricker?
Bricker, B-R-I-C-K-E-R.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, what happened at that board meeting while we were gone on Thursday, I think it was June the 18th, I think it was, they did read it as a report, because already they had all these organizations that were aware, and the state officials, you know, that were aware of this changes in the bilingual policy, okay? And so they just presented it as a report and said that they would come back and bring it at the next board meeting to vote on, okay? So in the meantime, they never went through the procedure that they usually do when they have an item on the agenda that's going to affect, you know, the curriculum or the, you know, our children. Usually they have hearings in the different neighborhoods where they will get the whole HISD community you know, they will notify them of some of the changes, and that where the community can come back and have input. And this time that committee didn't do that. No. What they wanted to do at the last moment, and that was after the June meeting, was that they wanted each member of the board to have a meeting in their community with their community and talk about it. Well, you know, when you go into your community, they're going to ask questions. We didn't know what was going on. We weren't in on the planning at all. No reports were ever brought to us as board members that, well, we're doing this, you know. This did not come to us, to at least two board members, until a week before the June meeting. And then they wanted to vote and pass it on the first reading. So we had a forum that this community organization, and it's the Partners for Public Education, and we have I don't think we have too many Hispanics participating in that organization, but this year we have a Hispanic as president, and so they had a forum last week, I think it was. Yeah, last week at the Museum of Fine Arts. And it was a very good turnout, you know, and we had, of course, the committee, Jeff Chadwick and Gabriel Vasquez. We had Dr. Guadalupe San Miguel and from U of H, and Cynthia Cano, the attorney for MolDAV. And then we had Ellen DeCantor, and she is a professor of bilingual education at University of the Houston Baptist University, plus another professor, and she was a Hispanic professor that also is from the Houston Baptist University. And they made their presentation, like, you know, the professors from the Houston Baptist, who are professionals in bilingual education, made their presentation. And of course, you know, they felt like this policy, it doesn't agree with what they teach, you know, or their findings as far as bilingual education, as to how long it will take a student to transition into the English language. So it was a pretty good meeting, you know. Only thing that happened was that Mr. Chadwick sort of, like, you know, they lost his control for a while and said, you know, well, folks, you know, all our tests, like the TAS test, they're all in English, and this is America, you know. And so it was like, you know, actually these kids should learn English, because this is America, you know, and this is the language that we should learn, you know. So Dr. San Miguel proposed that a Blue Ribbon Committee, you know, be formed to work with the committee, with a bilingual committee, and for it to be pulled out of the agenda yesterday, and for this Blue Ribbon Committee to work with them, you know, on the language of that policy, and they they didn't want to do it.
Because they had the votes.
Because they had the votes. And there was a very, very powerful force somewhere behind that, them, because even Gabriel on the table yesterday asked me and Ms. Campos, would we vote for him to delay it for another 30 days? And I told him, we'll vote with you to delay for another 30 days, but bring in but provided that they're going to be working with that committee. So he goes off again, and I don't know who he's talking to, and then he comes back after a little while, he says this, they won't let me do it.
So they means the whites and the blacks. Well, where is Rod Page in all this? How does he feel about bilingualism?
Actually, Rod Page has not really come out, you know, at all.
But you worked with him over the years, you kind of have a feel.
Yeah. Well, you remember that the board president can work with him on some of the items that are coming before the board to be voted on. But remember, I'm not the president this year, so it was the other president working with him. And that's about the way the vote went yesterday. 6-2, our third board member that we have voted with us was not there.
This is the second time now.
This is the second time that this happens when a few board members get together and they want to ramrod something through the board.
Well, I don't know which second one you're talking about, but I remember I was going to bring up Rod Page's selection, where blacks and whites got together against Hispanics. This is the same thing again here.
That one. And the way that committee got together, that group
got together. Can you tell me that story?
Huh?
Tell me that story.
Well,
were you on the board?
I was on the board.
How long have you been on the board?
12 years.
Okay.
That little group got together the first time they got together, and it was three Anglos and one black. And the reason they got together was to write the beliefs and visions, you know, of the Houston School District. And I think it was, we had Frank Petrosella there as superintendent. What happened out of this gathering of this four board members that were meeting for the beliefs and visions statement grew out the idea, you know, that they were going to let Frank Petrosella go and bring in and not do a superintendent search, but submit the name of Dr. Page. Oh, let me get you a Coke.
No, I'm going to get you some water.
Oh, well, let me get you some cold water.
No, it's for you.
Oh, okay.
Well, you want cold water?
No.
It's just you were clearing your throat. Mm-hmm.
No, I've been having sort of like not a throat infection, but it's allergies.
Mm. And too much talking.
Oh, no. All this thing is killing me out here. This trees and pollen. See how the car is gray, but it's yellow with all that pollen. I mean, the one in back of
it. Yeah.
But anyway.
Was this black member of that four, Rod Page?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, anyway.
How many black members were there of the full board at that time?
We had, at that time we had, I think it was four Anglos, three blacks, and two Hispanics.
You and who else?
It was
Felix
me Flagler? And I think it was Felix Flagler.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Well, mm-hmm. Is this kind of like payback, this bilingual thing, payback because the Mexican-American community did not support Sylvester Turner or Lee Brown?
I don't know about that. I don't, you know, Sylvester Turner's thing was what? So how many years ago? I can't link it with that.
Okay. How about Lee Brown?
Because of the Hispanic support towards Lee Brown, I think...
No support for Lee Brown. It was either on Gracie Sines or Mosbacher.
Yes.
Yeah, and same thing happened with Sylvester Turner.
At the beginning, it was that way. But the second time around, the Hispanics went with Lee Brown.
Okay, so you don't see a link?
No.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, let me ask you, what are the underpinnings of tension between blacks and browns here in Houston or nationally?
Well,
everybody talks that we ought to get along. How come we don't?
That's what I don't know. I have no idea why we don't get along. I want to say that we have blacks out there that support us in some of our, you know, our ideas. Because even yesterday, there were two black persons that came to speak against what the school district was trying to do, you know, change the policy. They spoke against it. And I thought to myself, now, how is it that these two black board members are saying that, you know, the constituency wants them to vote this way? And the only two black persons that spoke on that item in the agenda were against the changing of that policy.
Were these prominent African-American leaders or parents or... Do you remember?
No, they were I want to say that they were professionals. They were professionals.
Okay. Uh-huh. So
Garnett Coleman was there yesterday.
State representative.
Uh-huh.
Well, you also had other state representatives, including your son, no?
Yes, my son was there.
State Senator Mario Gallegos.
Uh-huh. And so was Rick Noriega, State Representative Rick Noriega, State Representative Joe Moreno, State Representative Jessica Farrar, and State Representative John Whitmire. And there was...
Isn't he a...
State Senator John Whitmire, and there was a state representative from Dallas, Domingo Garcia, that was there too. Yes, we had a pretty big number of elected officials. Felix Fraga was there. Dorothy Caram was there. Angela Valenzuela was there, you know. But like I said, you know, they needed to do it this year, okay? They knew they had to vote and they needed to do it. And they weren't going to back off.
Well, any other comments on black-brown relations?
No. Except for, you know, sometimes we'll vote together on the board and sometimes, you know, we don't. But I don't want to say that they're, you know.
Well,
that I feel like, you know, they should support us, like we support them sometimes on the board, but I don't know. I can't tell you what it is because, I mean, I'm just dealing with this board members there on the table, you know.
What are the numbers now? How many students of different kinds are there in the district?
Well, we have, I want to say we have like 54% Hispanic and like 30, probably 30, maybe 35% Black. And the rest is Anglo and other, maybe
Asian.
Mm-hmm. I want to say Anglo, I think, was like 12%.
Okay. How about teachers? What are the numbers there?
Well, that they don't compare to the student population. Like, you know, that's been the problem in the Houston School District for a long time. I don't know, but the last time that I knew was 8% Hispanic teachers.
And principals?
Principals, I can't tell you, but there's not that many either. I guess there's not that many either, and we have a lot of our assistant principals, and in some cases, Hispanic principals live in our district. I can tell you that much, that we have a lot of them live in our district.
Do you know why?
I have no idea why. And we are not supposed to, we are not supposed to meddle in personnel. All we are there is to, you know, make policy. Like I said, and turn it over to the superintendent. A report that came from the state here about 3 years ago, I think it was, that the school trust, the board members were micromanaging, okay, and that we were concerned mostly with like personnel or jobs instead of the education of the children, and that the district had to sort of, like, you know, the board had to change that. And so we came to the board that that we no longer would have anything to do, like, do with personnel, or say, you know, recommend somebody to be hired or anything like that, or even talk to any of the personnel in the school district. And it was voted on the table, and it passed. In other words, we could not meddle with personnel. And I still can't understand some of the, you know, parts of that, because see, the superintendent now, he can hire and fire anybody in the school district, and we have nothing to do with it, or we cannot tell him who to hire or fire. Yet we get, on board meeting days, we get all this names of people that are being terminated, you know, and they show us the names, and then we have to go out there and vote on it. And, you know, that doesn't, you know, balance. And another thing is that one of the processes that when a teacher is trying to be terminated, you know, we have to sit in and hear them. A teacher or administrator, you know, one of the processes that they have to go through, I mean, I think their last chance is to come before the board and appeal to us. And that, again, I can't understand it. Because after all, we had nothing to do with their hiring, because we are not supposed to meddle, you know, in personnel.
How much time do you have left in your term?
It'll be up in this year, at the end of this year.
In 2000, you have to run again?
In November.
This November, 99? Uh-huh. Oh, so you're up.
Yes.
Are you going to run again?
Yes, I'm going to run.
All right. Well, let me ask you about relations between Chicanos, Mexican-Americans, and Mexicanos from Mexico, or recent immigrants from Central America.
Uh-huh.
How are those groups getting along?
Well, there was a group, could have been South America and Central America, the name of it is the Gulfton Area Neighborhood Association.
Gulfton?
Gulfton Area Neighborhood Association. And do you know where the Gulfton area is?
No.
Well, they have a nickname for it, you know, the city, the ghetto.
Oh.
You know, and this is where all those apartments are in the southwest part of the city. And there's blocks and blocks of apartment buildings. And at one time they were all Anglo. Well, now they're all, you know, it's mostly immigrants that have come in from out of the country, and they're living there because there's where the jobs are, and they don't need transportation to get, the buses are right there, you know, where they can, you know, go to work. And but they have organized themselves, and they were with us, you know, because it will affect them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So generally, you're saying to get along?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you, which is the most effective Mexican-American organization today?
Well, here, actually, I guess it's LULAC here in the city, or if anything happens, this is the only organization that, you know, that we're going to, you know, approach.
And in the state?
In the state, it's LULAC.
And in the nation?
I have been looking up to NALEO because, that doesn't mean that I am putting LULAC aside, because I more or less, you know, was aware of LULAC's fight from way back, because my father was one of the founders here in the LULAC Council 60 here. And he went to the, in 1929 when they started LULAC in Corpus Christi, he was there. He and Rudy Vara, you know, the Judge Vara's father. And Rudy Vara still lives, and he has, you know, where he has been sick off and on, he has a very, very, a brilliant mind. You know? And so they were the first ones. Of course, it was only then at the time a Texas organization, then it went nationwide. But NALEO sort of like keeps us informed as to where we are all over the U.S., you know. They have the facts and figures. That's nationwide, you know. And of course, they have facts and figures from the different states, too.
Who is the most effective Mexican-American political leader today?
The most effective? Well, where? All over the nation?
Take your pick. We can go backwards. Nation, state, local.
Well, over the nation, I mean, I guess the only one that we have in power is Richardson. I think it's Richardson. And I haven't really heard, not even from our, you know, the other ones out here in, from the state of Texas. But, and statewide, I guess, not really. Statewide, I can't tell you because the Hispanics that we have up there are Republicans. I mean, the highest one we have is a Republican, that's Tony, even though he's our friend, mind you. You know, but it's Tony Garza. He's the highest one representing here in the state. And, or maybe I'm just thinking of him because, you know, he's a friend. In the city, I tell you one thing, it's like they're in the state, I don't even consider my son in the state because he's always fighting here. I almost consider him like, he's one of the few that will put his head on the chopping block, okay? I wish we had more like that. And mind you, he gets the support of his colleagues, you know, like Rick and Noriega and Joe Moreno. And Rick is a newcomer, you know. We still have to watch him. Rick, you know, we're going to watch him. And Jessica and Joe.
Well, Joe's new also.
Joe is new too, yes. Joe is very new. Just about as new as Rick. Both of them came in the same time, I think. Actually, I don't think we have had any official there long enough, you know, to actually come out. And I don't know, sometimes I worry about my son because he goes way out on a limb, you know, and people say, oh, radical, you know. But Jose, you know that what we have been through out here, and I know because my father was also an activist, you know, he always said, you know, he says, when we are out there, you know, just getting ahead, you know, they'll throw some kind of monkey wrench there, you know, kind of stop it, you know. And it was like back then when you couldn't vote unless you had a poll tax. And I remember that my father had a book that they gave him, maybe the city or whoever, and he would sell the poll taxes at the beginning. At the beginning for $1.50. Now, $1.50 back then, that was a lot of money, especially for our Hispanics, you know. But he said, if you don't get involved, you know, we can't get things done here, you know, and all of that. So he sold poll taxes for $1.50. And then they saw that some Hispanics were buying it and going out to vote. And then they raised it up to, I think it was $3 or $3.50. Okay? And then years after that, they did away with the poll tax. But he felt, they're trying to keep us away, you know, keep us from going to vote.
What is the most pressing issue facing Mexican Americans today?
The most pressing issue? Well, I'm thinking, you know, educational-wise, the dropout rate, you know, and I think that's one of the most pressing issues. And although, you know, we are having more of our students graduate nowadays, we still don't have enough counseling out there for them, you know. And as far as resources in the middle school, where they have found out that this is when they drop out, you know. No counseling in the high school grade, I mean in high school, as to, you know, whether, what subjects they should take, and, you know, if they want to go to college, or where can they apply for scholarships, you know, things like that. We're still lacking all of those resources. And again, you know, we might have them in some parts of the city, you know, better than we do in our neighborhoods.
Well, the local newspaper says that the Houston School District hides numbers, that the dropout rates are higher than what they admit to, that they're going to investigate.
I wish they could investigate and prove it.
You agree or you don't agree?
What?
What I just said.
Well, like I said, I'm not supposed to micromanage. I'm not supposed to say, tell the superintendent, you know, this is what we are hearing, and the state says that too, you know, and even the last report that came out, the news media put it out like, oh, there's 5 infractions or something, but it's nothing that cannot be fixed. You know, nothing. It's 5 minor infractions. In other words, it's nothing. And the school district is going to take care of it. And that's exactly what the superintendent will tell us, you know. Yeah, they're working on it, you know.
Well, cheating is a violation. It's a crime.
Oh, I know that.
And that's not micromanaging to say, are we committing a crime or not? Mm-hmm. All right, let me ask you, what is leadership?
Leadership.
What is it?
I think that if you grew up in a neighborhood like I did, uh, And again, you know, a lot of people and amongst our people, they don't believe in getting involved, okay? Maybe some, most of us were taught that way, Jose, you know, leave it alone, I mean, don't get involved, let them work out their problems, stuff like that, okay? But there will be some that, that deep inside feels this is wrong, you know, and you will try and work. And what I saw, I went through it when I was, because I was born here in Houston, in Magnolia Park. I went to Daisy Elementary. We had no bilingual teachers there, you know. But when my kids were going to elementary, I felt that a lot of the things that I went through were still there, okay? And I started, that's when I got involved in the schools when my kids were there in elementary. And I feel like any person that sees things that are not going right out there and that you try and go out there and show all these things that are happening to the people, you know, and make them understand. And and prove, you know, sort of like prove to them that these things that you're saying are true, you know. And I think that they will look up to a person like that. That is my thinking of leadership, okay? A person that will go out there and will try to make things right or will work, you know, to try and better. And I started that in my neighborhood.
Well, why don't we switch over to that? You've been involved in politics on the school board, you just said, 12 years, you're going to run again. And you've been involved before that.
It was neighborhood, like I said.
Why don't you tell us a story? How did you get involved? Why? Why do you do this?
Okay. I got involved first with my kids in school. And I got my kids involved in Little League, in the YWCA, because there was no YM, there was a YWCA in our neighborhood. And they had, of course, they had activities for both the boys and the girls there. But everywhere I went, you know, to get involved because of our kids, the same parents were there, you know? Same parents were at PTA in school, were at the Y, were at the Little League Park, okay? That's what I'm saying to you, that a lot of us were brought up that way. Don't get involved. But some of us are more outgoing, you know? And so it was the same parents. And then you have to depend on this parents. You need volunteer for this, volunteer for that. Oh, this parent likes to get involved. I'm gonna call her. Okay. Then, early on, we had politicians that would come and try to get us to get the people to vote for them, okay? And hold meetings and says, okay, you know, we'll get them and you come and see what it is you have to say. And then, of course, a lot of people weren't even registered to vote.
What years are these?
I am talking about the 55-60.
Well, when were you born?
1926.
Okay.
Uh-huh. But the politics part of it, okay? 55-60. We start getting people, you know, registered to vote, you know, because this person wants for them to vote for him, okay? And then we go vote, and it's like, wow, you know? They want to see every piece of document that identifies you, okay? And
all right, all Anglos, predominantly Hispanic neighborhood.
And so then, you know, during this time, so we're starting to go out there and vote and bringing all these people to vote, and then some of the officials that are running says, well, now you make sure that you have, you know, be sure and go to the Democratic, the neighborhood convention. Democratic convention. That's what it is. There in the precinct after the polls close. And we don't know nothing about this. We never heard about them, about those conventions, you know, in the precinct. The precinct conventions, okay? Never heard of them. And then this guy says, well, yes, there's supposed to be a sign out there that tells you, you know, that if you want to participate in the precinct convention, come back right at 7 o'clock. Well, that sign is not there, you know? So then one day somebody tells me, well, no, the reason that sign is not there is because that lady, she counts the votes, and then she takes all the clerks to her house, which was down the street, not too far down from the polling place, and she has a precinct convention there at her house, you know? And so that's why we didn't know about precinct conventions. And this lady had been there forever and ever. She was a pillar of the community, you know? And so then, I want to say it was in the 60s that this group got together and they decided that they had enough Hispanics to run at least, let's see, 1, 2, 3, I think it's 3 precinct boxes there in that area, okay? And so we had guidance as to how to get together, and it just so happened that it was going to be during a general election when we would be having a precinct convention and all of that, you know. So we went, somebody came and instructed us how to do it, and they posted a candidate. I was a candidate for precinct 64.
What group was this? Was this PASO or?
No, it wasn't PASO, because when I ran against this Anglo lady, PASO tried to dissuade me from it was another group from our neighborhood, and I cannot remember, I think it was, they had a name. And Mexican American something. I'm not sure it was MAPA. No, it was MAPA. I think it was MAPA.
Oh. Okay.
And anyway, one of my nephews was really involved, and he's still out there, you know, but he's not in politics, you know. And he's just, he's just a retired senior. and we got very well organized. And my name went on the ballot. PASO tried to dissuade me because PASO was like with the unions then, and the unions were supporting, of course the unions were mostly Anglo too, you know. PASO used to get their monies from the unions, and this union supported this little Anglo lady, you know. She had been there like for 40 years, something like that. Anyway, we organized, and I remember that day of the election. Oh, we registered people, Hispanics. You cannot imagine what a big registration drive we had. The day of the election, the lady had a Hispanic working there with her, one of our friends. She didn't know that person was our friend. We all knew everybody in the, you know, in that area. And so he knew what was going to happen, you know. And so I remember that election day, and we kept calling all the Hispanics that we had registered and those that were registered and all of that. And we had somebody checking who would come by. It was like we knew them all, you know. I mean, that in those days, I kept a file with everybody's name. I knew who died, who moved away, and I pulled a card. I knew all of that. You don't know. You can't keep track of that anymore today, you know. Anyway.
Well, you can on a computer.
Across the street from the fire station where the Precinct 64 polling place was, there was a home that belonged to a fireman, an Anglo fireman. You know, he was married to a Hispanic girl, okay? And so he had a big home there. And we were there for the precinct convention. Everybody gathered there at that house that was going to go to the precinct convention. And like I said, we kept an eye on the people coming in to vote during the day. We kept calling, and I know that when 7 o'clock came, the lady decided to count the votes, you know, right away. They were, you know, it was by machine. And I know, and I timed her, there was about 4 machines, and I timed her how long she took counting each machine. And the last one that she counted, it was like she just stayed there for the longest, you know. And it was like she couldn't get up and walk out. You know, and that's when I knew. I says, I think I beat her, you know. You know, and then at 7 o'clock, the people across the street that were gathered all across the street, they walked across to the fire station. They had to pull all those fire trucks out, you know, because there was not enough room for the people that we brought in. And so not only did we win the box, but we won the precinct convention. And that happened in precinct 65 too. And the other one, we barely lost it, you know, in 69, but they won the precinct convention, you know, barely lost it. So actually we won 2 precincts that night. And it was like, you know, how that goes. Kind of gives you a feeling that, oh gosh, you know, I'd like to just stay and do this forever.
So what did you do with that?
I ran the precinct.
But okay. Then what did you do with that?
With that?
Yeah. Now you had a little power base.
Exactly.
And then what did you do with it?
I was there like for 15 years, not till, I want to say 15 years until I had to go to Brownsville, 12 years.
Okay.
I had to go to Brownsville with my husband.
Now, in these 12 years, did you work with anybody to get a Hispanic on the city council or on the school board or anything?
Yes, yes.
Because I know that you work with Lionel and Ben and Luna, but that's not till the late 70s, early 80s.
Well,
or am I wrong?
The first one was Lauro Cruz.
That's correct. Uh-huh. Curtis Graves, Lauro Cruz, at that time.
Do you remember what year it was?
No. But I interviewed him, and so I have the year.
We carried all those precincts for Lauro Cruz. And he won.
Yes.
You remember he won? Okay. We carried all those precincts. And we were all working together, those three precincts in that area.
So did you and the other precinct chairs come together and talk and visit coffee?
You were
working together?
Oh, yeah. We met. We had meetings in the evenings and talked about what we were going to do.
Who were the other two precinct chairs at that time? You said there's only three.
There was, we won two boxes.
Uh-huh.
Remember, out of the three, we won two boxes. They were all Anglo.
Right.
Held by Anglos. The other one, this young man, his name was Ernest Perez, and he lived on the, his father had a, it was a restaurant on the corner of 76 and Canal Street, and that building is still there. And the last time I saw him, he was selling cars for, who was he selling cars for? Somewhere in the southwest part of town, I went to see about a car, and he was selling cars, and he was the one that won that box, that his first Hispanic, and I was the first Hispanic in 64.
And female, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how many kids did you have by then?
Well, I want to say that I had maybe three.
How did you balance taking care of the husband, taking care of your house, taking care of your kids, your activism?
My husband helped me a lot, you know. My husband was very active, you know. He was active. He became active también porque lo hicieron for him to become active ahí en el fire station. Le decían Mexican, greaser, I mean, you name it, you know. And y él era el único mexicano ahí. Nothing he could do. Just took it and swallowed it.
Can we get his name here?
It's Mario Gallegos Sr. Okay. You know, and so he got active in that. He was, like I said, TV didn't come into around the 50s. Not too many of our people had televisions, and the fire department needed to notify the people about during the Christmas holidays about the Christmas tree fires. You know, could be caused by all these lights on the tree, and in the winter about the heaters, you know, and all that. Well, what he did, Felix was working. He was working part-time at Ripley House. He was going...
Felix Fraga.
He was going part-time to the U of H and working with the kids at Ripley House part-time. And what Felix would do, my husband would go to Ripley House, and Felix had this little recorder, you know, like square recorders, and he would ask my husband questions, you know, pertaining to the fires and all that. My husband would answer and talk and all that. And then they took that tape on certain days, certain time to KLBL, which was the only Hispanic radio station operating here in Houston, you know. And they would run that tape. And that was once a week, you know. And it was like fire prevention.
Yeah.
Okay, and so he did that, and then he...
So he helped you a lot with the kids and supported your activism.
Yeah,
okay.
Yes.
Well, let's get back to you. Uh-huh. You won Lauro Cruz,
uh-huh.
And then what was next? What was the next big challenge?
What was the next big challenge?
Leonel Castillo? City Council?
Well, that came way later. City Council came back way later. I want to say Ben Reyes came before. It was Lauro Cruz and then Ben Reyes for the legislature.
Ah, okay, the legislature.
Uh-huh.
All right.
And then...
Al Luna, then Román Martínez,
and somewhere in between there came Leonel Castillo. But I want to say...
Well, Leonel was in the city.
Huh?
Leonel was in the city.
Yes, Yes, but I want to say that when Leonel was elected, I wasn't here. I think
okay.
I was behind. But I was here when Lauro Cruz.
Did you ever work for Lauro as a staff person?
No.
Did you ever work for Ben as a staff person?
I worked for Ben as a staff person when, but I had already come back from
Brownsville.
From Brownsville, and he was in city council, and he had his office there on 75th Street.
Oh, when he was on the city council.
Mm-hmm. And this was towards the end of his city council because then, no. I went to work for him when he was in the legislature, when he was in the state legislature, part-time, yeah. But I also worked for Al Luna part-time, and I worked for Roman Martinez part-time.
Right, so
on
so
a
you...
part-time basis. Yes, uh-huh.
Okay.
For all of them, I worked part-time.
Okay.
And yes, I was involved in, you know.
What about the, you know, there's something amazing here that happened not long ago. You're the chair of the board of the school district. Erlinda Garcia is chair of the board of the community college district. You get Ruth Burgos Sasser, another Latina, to be the chancellor.
Mm-hmm.
You get Silvia Garcia to be the controller, the number two position. All these powerful positions held by Latinas, Hispanic women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Men have not been able to do that. Do women, Hispanic women, do politics different?
I don't know. Maybe they're more convincing. I don't know.
Well, how do you win elections?
How do I win elections? Well,
for yourself or for others? How do you do it?
The elections that I have won, I have walked house to house. Okay, I have met almost all the constituency, you know. And I don't know whether you were there when I ran for the board. I was walking out there, you know. So because
Gloria and I walked.
Yes, because I knew that this was the way it could be done. Because this is the way it was. That was grassroots politics, you know.
But these districts are too large. You need a lot of volunteers. You need a lot of money.
Well, now we do. Years ago, we made our own our own precinct lists. You know how you can buy them now? Well, we used to make our own, and that, like I tell you, we had a file box, you know, and it's not like today. You know, like today, the county, you know, does the list and you buy them, and a lot of those voters are not even there anymore. They haven't been here for like 5 years. They passed away 5 years ago, and they're still on the list. And you just can't, you know, keep track of that anymore because the precincts are bigger. And but I still feel like when we had our precinct, we had more voters go out then, you know? And I don't know, maybe that was because we were closer. I don't know. We were closer because it was all in that one neighborhood. Now you have to get out of your neighborhood, you know, and walk other neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the school district boundaries are bigger, and just like the state legislature, and Senate, you know, they cover a lot of territory. You know?
Olga, I'm going to run out of battery. So let me quickly just ask you, tell me about who your parents are, where they came from, a little bit about your children, who they are.
Okay.
Because we're going to run out.
My father was born in Concepcion, Texas, La Chona. And my mother was born in Brownsville, Texas.
Their names?
His name was Elias Ramirez. Her name was Isabel Ayala Ramirez. My mother married my father when she was like, I think, 14 years old. He was a little older, maybe 5 years older than her. And they came to Houston in 1910. I had